Ford v. Barnhart, Mr. Shirk.
Morning, Your Honor. This case is about, again, about post-traumatic stress syndrome. And a Vietnam veteran who had it. This case has been going on for 10 years. The essence of it is, the way we're looking at it, is that the administrative law judge discredited lay testimony that was contemporaneous with the period prior to the date last insured, on which the medical opinion relied. The medical evidence that related to the inability of Mr. Allard, plaintiff appellate Allard, to perform work at the time, to perform any kind of work at the time he was at the date last insured, relied in significant part on the contemporaneous lay testimony. The ALJ discredited the contemporaneous lay testimony. We believe that was erroneous, and we think that had that testimony been given appropriate credence, then the medical testimony had to be accepted. Excuse me, sir?
What is the latest date that brings you into the coverage period?
December 12, 1992.
If you got that, then if you can show it,
yes,
on
sir.
That date.
If within, let's say, the 12 months prior to that, you can show that you're unable to perform the work, to perform any work, at that point you become qualified for disability.
Was this a neighbor, this woman that testified with regard to seeing him and the layperson that testified?
Yes, sir.
It was a neighbor
and an acquaintance, and I think a friend. There's no... It's very clear from the regulations that the testimony of such people is admissible
well,
as to be considered.
I'm not questioning that. I just wondered what the relationship.
That's correct, sir. We've taken a close look at both the ALJ's opinion and the magistrate's opinion. I know that in the government's brief and in the commissioner's brief, they pointed out that this is a de novo review. We're aware of that, but we also think, along with what this court said in Barnhart v. White, that it's risky not to consider what the magistrate and the district court say. And in this regard, we think that what the magistrate did is very instructive, and therefore we discussed it to some extent. What happened is the magistrate found all sorts of things wrong with the ALJ's opinion. The magistrate found that the decision as to the credibility of Melissa Chapel White, who's the neighbor, the neighbor providing the contemporaneous testimony, was not credible, basically because she had a relationship of some sort. I think the comparison was totally unfair and inappropriate, but of some sort, and therefore she wasn't credible. The ALJ states throughout his opinion that her testimony is that of an interested person and therefore is not credible. The magistrate found that credibility determination, which is based on objective factors, it's not a determination based on demeanor. The magistrate found that to be based on faulty reasoning and really not very fair and not correct. The magistrate also noted that the ALJ's finding that in any event, contemporaneous testimony of the inability to perform work just prior to the date last insured had to be medical testimony. That's clearly not the case. The magistrate noted that. This court has said that, and the registration and the regulations don't require it.
She was the one that recommended he seek treatment?
Yes, sir.
And that was in Maryland, at a VA hospital in Maryland?
Yes. And she had previously recommended that he seek treatment elsewhere with doctor with a non-VA facility, which didn't work out and which plays a role in the findings. But the bottom line here from our perspective is this. The fact is that had, we believe, the ALJ found that testimony credible, then the testimony of the treating medical person who was a psychologist, Dr. Maksakis, a very experienced Veterans Administration psychologist, and subsequently the later testimony of Dr. Shea, a nationally known expert in PTSD, which relied in part on the contemporaneous lay evidence, we think that that would have been the end of it. In fact, the magistrate himself notes that had Dr. Matsaka's testimony been accepted, it would have settled all five steps, or at least settled the issue. I think that what we're really talking about here is an attempt by the ALJ to find a way simply not to give Mr. Allard his disability. I think also that what we're looking at here in terms of the ALJ opinion is a failure to build the logical bridge, which has been referred to here before, from the evidence to the conclusion. The magistrate's attempt is instructive in that he tries to recognize to reconstruct what the ALJ did by saying essentially, well, implicitly I don't believe the credibility determination. But then he says the ALJ went on to use contemporaneous corroborating evidence, and lo, he goes back to Melissa Chapel White, and according to the magistrate, and says, well, her testimony wouldn't have supported a finding of PTSD anyway, or at least a finding of complete disability, because I think it's important to note that the ALJ did find that Mr. Allard has severe PTSD. He noted that it wasn't at that point a listed an identified disorder, but Dr. Matsaka's opinion points out that it would clearly fall within serious anxiety disorder, and we don't think that's a critical issue. I think that the central question that needs to be addressed here, we think, is that but for the decision to discredit Melissa Chapel White's testimony, which is based strictly on the ALJ's determination that they were friends and had a relationship, is simply insufficient and illogical. And had that not happened, had the medical opinion been given the deference to which it was due, or accorded the weight which it was due, this case would have been decided in favor of granting Mr. Allard his benefits. I think that's the bottom line. I think furthermore that you couldn't that saying that the ALJ further took Melissa Chapel White's testimony and corroborated that even if he had believed Melissa Chapel White's testimony, that it wouldn't have mattered is incorrect, because I think if you look closely at that testimony, or even generally at it, she says that Mr. Allard couldn't communicate, he couldn't take instructions, he couldn't function in a work environment, and it was on that, in part, that the doctors, Dr. Matsaka in particular, based her opinion that he was unable to work, period. If that were the case, then he should be given the disability benefits.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shirk. Ms. Thorson?
May it please the Court, I'm Mary Thorson for the Commissioner of Social Security, defendant appellee. The issue before the Court is whether substantial evidence supports the ALJ's decision that Mr. Allard failed to meet his burden to prove he was disabled on or before December 31st, 1992. Mr. Allard,
what I understand is the magistrate judge identified errors in the administrative law judge's analysis of Chapel White's testimony. How can the ALJ's credibility finding be upheld if it's based on errors?
I believe the magistrate judge identified those errors but concluded that they were essentially insignificant.
How do we know that if the administrative law judge hadn't made those mistakes, he would have discredited Chapel White?
I think we can tell from his entire analysis of Ms. Chapel White's testimony. One thing the magistrate noted that the ALJ didn't err on, for example, was that Ms. Chapel White appeared to change her testimony about when she had the most interaction with Mr. Allard. She at first indicated pretty unequivocally that her interaction with Mr. Allard was really at its greatest between 1987 and 1990.
She's testifying about events almost 20 years ago.
Correct.
Nobody gets that kind of dating straight. That's silly. Why would she be lying for this fellow?
I don't believe, Your Honor, the ALJ...
He's not very attractive. I mean, you know, he's got a serious mental problem. He's kind of frightening. So why would she be lying for him? I don't understand that.
Well, I think, Your Honor, you just highlighted one of the inconsistencies that the ALJ looked at, and that was that we've got this very frightening person who's possibly a danger to himself and others, and yet Ms. Chappell-White is hiring him to do jobs. She never complained about the quality of his work. She's socializing with him, hiking with him, allowing him to help with her elderly mother. She's also...
And therefore she's lying for him under oath?
But her...
She's way too nice to be believed.
She's too nice to be believed. Maybe that's it. No, what she's
that
saying about...
That doesn't make any sense at all.
She lies? I don't
no,
understand.
No. She's so nice that she is really so sympathetic to this individual, and we're not saying she consciously lies, but she has such a
well, but she
such
did,
a desire
she did
to
what,
help this individual.
She did what he hadn't done for himself, as that is, recommend that he seek treatment, right?
Correct. She did that once, and when Mr. Allard went to see Dr. Hutchinson... And it didn't work out. She apparently waited a few more years before she again prompted him to seek treatment. But I think one of the most significant problems with Ms. Chappell-White's testimony is that it conflicted directly with Dr. Hutchinson's contemporaneous report. That's the only mental health professional who examined Mr. Allard during the relevant period. Yes, it was in 1987, early in the period we're looking at, but we are looking at the entire period beginning July 1987, ending December 31st, 1992.
Yeah, that's when he retired from the Marine Corps after 20 years, right?
Correct. He retired from the Marine Corps, yet Dr. Matsakis said he was essentially unemployable and disabled before he retired from the Marine Corps, which right there suggests some inconsistency, at least with the agency's regulations and the
well,
statute.
Except there's also testimony that people with post-traumatic stress disorders function much better in military than they do on the outside.
And that might well have served him well in the military. But then again, he apparently was working in 1993 when he went to see Dr. Matsakis. He was once...
Wait, why did his earnings... Why does he have to show that he was disabled before by 1992?
He has to show he was disabled by the end of 1992 because that's when his insured status expired.
Why did his insured status end then?
Because he had not been paying into the system for several years. Now, I think you're wondering why there weren't some earnings on his record between 1987 and 1990, perhaps. And there's certainly a question in the record as to that. And it's not clear what was going on there, whether or not Mr. Allard was being paid in cash, exactly what the arrangement was
well,
at that time.
Does it sound as if he was just working sporadically?
He certainly could have been.
Well, what did the ALJ do with that?
I think the ALJ considered the unequivocal statements of Dr. Matsakis and of Mr. Allard that he was employed. No one at the time that they referred to his being employed said he was employed, but he was only working sporadically or he was working...
Well, he was either working sporadically or what? His employers weren't reporting to Social Security or what?
It sounds to me like he was picking up sort of odd jobs where they may not... It might have just been...
Is that gainful employment?
Pardon?
Is that gainful employment?
Would have been. It's not clear from the record. Mr. Allard didn't turn in all of his tax records, so the agency wasn't able to examine those. He did allude to some IRS problems and a debt of $15,000 at one point for the 1987 to 89 period. I'm not sure if that relates to what we're looking at here, but the fact remains that we have Dr. Hutchinson's thorough analysis, thorough examination, mental status examination, objective findings, squarely within the period at issue here, showing that Mr. Allard was not disabled. Dr. Matsakis and Ms. Chappell-White relate their opinion back to that same exact time, but Ms. Chappell-White was not a psychologist. Dr. Matsakis did not treat Mr. Allard in 1987, did not even meet Mr. Allard until 1993. Even then, she saw him for a period of barely 3 months in 1993. So really, we can only... Her retrospective opinion is only reasonably informed by that very...
You're putting all your weight on Hutchinson, right? So he went to Hutchinson. So Allard went to Hutchinson and what? He was having problems with adjustment, okay?
Correct.
Yeah.
And his divorce.
And Hutchinson didn't find anything particularly serious.
Nothing
okay?
significant.
What is Hutchinson's competence to evaluate this condition?
He's a psychologist.
A psychologist with what kind of background and training and expertise?
I don't recall specifically.
Well, isn't that rather material?
I'm not sure that it is.
He's not a psychiatrist, right?
Not a psychiatrist.
Right. So what does he know about post-traumatic stress disorder?
He knows what any psychologist would
what
be expected to
know. What does any psychologist know about post-traumatic stress disorder?
Would be expected to be familiar
Why
with
do
the
you
disorder.
Say that? Why do you say that?
I apologize.
Do you know that?
I'm saying it now.
What's your basis for it?
Post-traumatic stress disorder has been recognized.
What is your basis for opining about what a psychologist is expected to know?
I'm essentially basing it on my general knowledge of what a qualified physician and or,
he's
in
not
this
a physician.
Case, a psychologist
not
would be
his
expected
physician.
To know about the
he's
areas.
He's not a psychiatrist.
He's a psychologist. As
what
was,
I know, and I'm just asking you, what are psychologists supposed to know about post-traumatic stress syndrome?
It's not a good thing they know about.
Correct. They know what the clinical findings are, what they would expect to see in an individual.
But if someone comes to you, you're a psychologist, and says he's having trouble working and he's worried that his wife wants a divorce, do you jump to the conclusion that he has some psychiatric problem, or is he just someone who's upset?
I'm not sure what any psychologist would do, Your Honor, but based
Hutchinson
on...
Hutchinson know he was a veteran?
I'm not I think he did. I think that was in his report. Dr. Matsakis, however, was a psychologist, too, and she seemed to think that she knew immediately that it was obvious that this individual...
Do all psychologists know the same amount about every mental disorder?
Certainly not. But they know how to perform a basic mental status examination, which Dr. Hutchinson did here. Dr. Matsakis did not.
When was post-traumatic stress syndrome recognized in the catalog of mental problems?
I believe it was in the 1980s sometime, Your Honor. I'm
well,
not
that's,
an expert.
That's my question is, so when Dr. Hutchinson interviewed him, mm-hmm. do we know it was even a recognized
I think we do because I think there's some evidence in the record that Dr. Matsakis and Dr. Shea were both publishing on the disorder way back in the early
they
80s.
They were publishing? In other words, they were interested in this.
They were interested.
Was Hutchinson?
I'm not sure if he was.
Was he on the frontier with these other two?
I'm not sure that he
so
was.
In other words, Max, what's his name, Matsakis?
Mm-hmm.
Her name.
Matsakis and Shea. They're actually people who study post-traumatic stress disorder. They're experts on it. They publish on it.
Correct.
So far as you know, Hutchinson is just a run-of-the-mill psychologist who may have never heard of the disorder.
Correct, but in this case he had the advantage of seeing Mr. Allard during the
That's
period we're
advantage,
looking
at. That's an advantage, but it mightn't be worth anything if you didn't know what...
Worth an awful lot
if
under
never
our
heard
regulations,
of the disease
Your
that
Honor.
The person was suffering from, it would be hard to diagnose it, wouldn't it?
But objective findings are objective findings. If they fit within
No, if you don't know what you're looking for, you're not going to find it, right?
I'm not sure that's true. I don't think that colors the psychologist's ability to assess an individual objectively.
If he came to... these symptoms that he described, he was sad, he restricted range of flat affect or something like that, they could be symptoms of anything, right?
Not necessarily, no, I don't believe so. I think depression is one of the disorders that you could see that with, adjustment disorder, which
right,
Dr.
so
Hutchinson
he's somewhat
did diagnose.
Depressed, but this could be a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder, but Hutchinson wouldn't know because he'd never heard of it.
I don't know that he'd never heard of it, Your Honor.
Well,
there's nothing in the record to say he hasn't.
Right?
I think we can reasonably assume he's familiar with
Why
the gamut of disorders because he's a professional psychologist.
What about Judge Kaney's question? We don't know whether it was generally known in the psychological profession in the middle 80s.
I think it was fairly well known by them because the Vietnam War was over. Most of the vets who were
having... The answer to his question, you said it wasn't discussed as a psychiatric problem until the 1980s.
Correct.
This is the 1980s that Hutchinson is reporting
on. Very late 1980s, I believe.
No, it's not. It's 1987, right?
The latter third of the 1980s. I think Dr. Hutchinson's position to observe this individual is what's key here. Dr. Matsakis, for all her incredible efforts to help this individual, did not see this particular individual in person during the period we're looking at, and that's what the statute really looks for. And that's why I asked the court to affirm.
She was lying, too?
I would never say Dr. Matsakis was lying.
Why not?
Because I believe she was telling the truth to the best of her ability. However, I also think she was perhaps leaning over backwards, as this court has recognized. We outlined in our brief any number of reasons Dr. Matsakis was leaning over backwards.
Why? What would one reason be?
One reason would be her reference to the fact that Mr. Allard could perform menial work, but it would disqualify him.
Why is that leaning over backwards? I don't understand. I thought you meant some bias of some sort.
No, I think she's saying that he could work, which would disqualify him for Social Security benefits, and yet she's opining that he's disabled. That's a fundamental inconsistency.
Okay, well, thank you very much,
Ms. Thank you very much.
Mr. Shirk, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Thank you.
Let me just quickly address the points made by counsel for the commissioner. First of all, the relationship, the concern about the relationship between Melissa Chapel White and Mr. Allard is ludicrous. Basically, the magistrate judge points this out too. What it does, although magistrate does what the position the government's taking does, although the magistrate court didn't use this term, it just sets up a catch 22. That's overused. But if a friend and an acquaintance and somebody that wants to help you can't testify to your condition, who can? The regulations contemplate that. Trying to twist this thing around the way the ALJ did is almost invidious. The ALJ said the same thing about Dr. Shea, who's a recognized expert who developed not a close relationship but was decent and had dinner with Mr. Allard in the process of working with him and assessing him. And the ALJ drew the same conclusion there. There was a personal relationship. Therefore, Dr. Shea, who, and I commend what he says in the record to the court, therefore, Dr. Shea, a nationally recognized expert on PTSD, who, as is said right in the record there, has devoted years, written books on this, to getting the public's attention to PTSD right during the period we're in question, it's really rather odd, and it would make it impossible for anybody in this position to ever be found disabled. I'd like to add also that Dr. Shea and Dr. Matsakis testify and state repeatedly in writing that during the period of time in questioning and well into the 1990s, even the VA wasn't set up to deal with these people. Dr. Matsakis was a specialist in this and learned how to deal with it and had spent years working with it already. Dr. Shea's written books about it. He's written a wonderful book called Achilles in Vietnam that I urge the court to take note of, that describes, that's wonderful in terms of classical affliction in classical history. But I think the point I want to make here is that people who spent their time, their days, their hours trying to get public attention to this, made an assessment of this thing, and in Dr. Matsakis' case, 4 months after the date last insured, and then Dr. Allard goes to somebody who's essentially a civilian and quite contrary to the position taken by counsel for the government, just historically was highly unlikely, however competent he was, to really have any understanding of this. This historically, and this is in the record as well as generally known, just wasn't focused on by people, and particularly by civilians, people who didn't work with people who were veterans. At the time in 1987, this whole thing was beginning to emerge, and Dr. Shea and Drs. Matsakis lay that out. And in other words, the notion that PTSD was a well-recognized thing, even by the early 1990s, is historical nonsense, and I think that's reflected in the record.
Okay,
I would like to say also, excuse me, sir.
Mr. Sheriff, your time has expired.
Thank you.
So we'll have to move on. And the court will be in recess until 1:30.